The Gervins had a home in town, but they freely used the Tarpley house when they were at the ranch. It would be theirs anyway when CC passed on to Glory. Fat must have been watching through a parlor window, for he came out onto the veranda and stood there, nonchalantly picking his teeth. Huey would bet his meal had been a lot better than the one put up by the bunkhouse cook. Fat's wife, Ellie, a frail-appearing little woman, stood just inside the screen door. Most people in town used to regard her as pretty, but Huey long suspected they were influenced more by her father's money than by her features. Even granting she was good-looking, Huey doubted that she had inherited old CC's smarts, or she wouldn't have wasted herself on Fat Gervin. Two children peeked out from behind her long skirt.
Fat! What are you trying to get away with?
What's the matter? You don't like them horses?
They're supposed to be young broncs of Alvin Laudermilch raisin. I'll bet Alvin never laid eyes on a one of them.
I didn't say they were of his raisin. I said they came from his ranch, and they did. They was driven right through it.
There's even a stud amongst them. They were all supposed to be geldings.
Well, you got a knife, ain't you? I don't see where it's any skin off of your nose anyway. You said yourself we're just a hired hand. The deal was between me and Jenkins.
But I'm here in his interests. And I sure ain't interested in taking him them snides you've got out yonder.
Well, then he'll have to send somebody else. Because those horses are his. I already got the money.
Huey dismounted and dropped the reins, knotting his fists as he strode toward the veranda steps.
Fat, you've had a good whipping coming to you for a long time.
The woman and children quickly disappeared into the darkness of the hall. Gervin stepped back into the doorway, then forward again. He leveled a shotgun at Huey.
You take one more step, Huey Calloway, and they'll tote you away from here in a box.
Huey stopped short, a chill in his belly. The muzzle of that shotgun looked as wide as a milk bucket.
I ain't armed.
Huey never carried a gun because he considered them too dangerous, especially those assumed not to be loaded. He had an old pistol in his war bag back at the Jenkins ranch, but he hadn't cleaned it in so long that it could have a dirt dauber nest in its barrel for all he knew. Fat's hands shook. Ordinarily, Huey wouldn't consider the man dangerous, but anybody that nervous was dangerous when he had a shotgun in his hands.
I'm phoning the sheriff that you came out here and tried to provoke a fight. Now you get back in that saddle, Huey, and you take them horses and get. If you ain't gone in 10 minutes, I'll file on you for trespass.
Huey feared he might accidentally squeeze the trigger.
I'm going. But I ain't forgetting. Just because Mr. Jenkins is old don't mean he's to be trifled with. And I ain't either.
Tommy's face was two shades paler than normal. The boy had never faced a gun before. Huey had, but repetition didn't make the experience easier.
I don't suppose CC knows anything about this.
Oh, it's my deal, not his. Now get!
Fat made a poking motion with the gun. Huey mounted and turned Biscuit away toward the corrals.
He'd have shot you.
Not on purpose, but Fat's subject to accidents. Anytime a man points a shotgun at you, you better tell him he's right and you're wrong. There'll come another day.
The slouching cowboy opened the corral gate and helped push the horses out into the open. Huey saw nothing to thank him for, so he didn't speak as he and Tommy rode past and lined the horses out on the trail that led toward town. He'd put them in a corral at the wagon yard tonight and talk to Sheriff Wes Wheeler. He doubted Wes could do anything, but it wouldn't hurt to talk. He considered talking to CC Tarpley, but also decided against it. The old man had too many worries already. Huey didn't have to look up Wheeler. Wheeler came to meet him several miles from town. A big man riding a big horse. Wheeler's back was straight as a ramrod. His manner friendly, but somewhat formal. He reined up and let Huey come the last short distance to him. He frowned as the loose horses trotted past him, Tommy trailing.
Are these what all the fuss was about?
Wasn't much of a fuss to it. Fat throwed a shotgun on me and the fuss was over with. Howdy, Wes.
Howdy yourself, Huey.
Wheeler had a deep, commanding voice that could bring a room full of drunks to immediate attention, and a handshake that could crush bones.
Fat told me his side of it over the telephone. What's yours?
Huey explained about the sale.
Well, Mr. Jenkins was given to understand that they was of Alvin Laudermilch's raisin. but they wouldn't fool a blind man.
I remember these skates. A ragged britches horse trader brought them into town from way down on the Devil's River. I wondered what Fat was gonna do with them.
What he'd done was run them in as ringers on his deal with Mr. Jenkins. Can you do something about it?
Wheeler's mouth turned downward.
I wish I could, but this is a case for the lawyers to fight over. I expect Fat was real careful how he described the horses when he wrote his letter. He's gotten awful bold since CC took down with his miseries.
Well, I call this theft. Grand larceny, maybe.
I can't argue the point, but I'm a sheriff, not a judge. Mr. Jenkins will have to get a lawyer if he wants to fight the case.
Well, he's got a low opinion of lawyers. If he was younger, he'd just show up with a bullwhip and make Fat come to Jesus.
Yeah, I couldn't blame him none. But this is 1910, and that's not the way folks do things anymore.
Well, more's the pity. I'd be sorely tempted to do it myself if I caught him without that shotgun.
I couldn't allow it, Huey. It's a matter for the court.
Well, there's more than one kind of court, and sooner or later, Fat'll come up for judgment. Lord, I wish I didn't have to be there when old man Jenkins sees these horses.
The horses traveled easier than Huey expected, probably because they'd been trail broken coming up from the lower country. So he was early in reaching the outskirts of Upton City. He looked at the sun and tried to judge how much daylight he could count on.
Wes, I believe we'll shoot for Walters and Eves before me and Tommy quit for the night. We'll circle around town.
That would probably spare the feelings of housewives with freshly washed clothing hanging on their lines. Even a small band of horses could stir a lot of dust. They would also rouse up the town dogs and perhaps result in a stampede. There was no limit to the damage 20 frightened broncs could do.
I'll help you.
Some of the complaints would surely land with him, so he was saving himself some aggravation. If anyone should ask, Huey would say he was simply trying to make all the miles he could, but the principal reason for avoiding town was that he didn't want everybody to see this string of third-rate horseflesh and know how badly Fat had snookered him and his boss. When they cleared the far edge of town, Wheeler and Huey reined up.
I'll bid you adios, Huey. Ain't no telling what crimes have been committed in my absence.
Well, this one was bad enough.
I wish there was more I could do. Nothing would tickle me better than to have Fat be a guest in my jailhouse. But don't you do something that'll put you in there, or that boy yonder.
I've been a guest in a few jailhouses, but Eve would never let me hear the end of it if Tommy was to be locked up with me. Right now, all I intend to do is deliver these horses.
After Wheeler parted company with them, Huey got to watching the stud in particular. For the black displayed signs of antisocial behavior that bordered on the criminal, biting, kicking at every other horse it could reach. It even took a notion to charge at Biscuit, and Huey had to fight it off by beating it with the doubled end of his rope. He strongly considered leaving the stud behind and telling Jenkins it had gotten away, like the bull he and Skip Harkness released. But that would be a dirty trick to play on anybody whose good mares took up with this sorry excuse for crowbait. Just at dusk, Huey saw the familiar homestead and loped ahead to open a corral gate. Walter spotted him coming and reached the gate first.
Thought you might not come back by.
Well, I hope Eve has got over being provoked at me. I've been tasting her biscuits ever since we left CC's place.
She gets mad easy, but she don't hold it long.
Tommy brought the horses in. Huey observed his brother's expression as the horses passed by him and through the open gate. Walter didn't have to say anything. His frown told it all.
Fat has run a Sandy on us.
Walter latched the gate.
If those are of Alvin's raising, I'll eat your hat.
Yeah, my hat is safe, but I don't know about my job.
Eve was more cordial than Huey thought she might be. She hugged her son and gave Huey a greeting that was civil enough, though not what he would call enthusiastic.
You all have got plenty of time to wash before supper.
She pointed that remark especially at Huey. Tommy was eager to tell her about the day.
We had some excitement over at Mr. Tarpley's. Mr. Gervin. He aimed a shotgun at Uncle Huey.
Eve's mouth fell open. Huey tried to explain what Fat had done, but all she heard was that a shotgun had been pointed in her son's general direction.
Huey Calloway, it's bad enough that you've lured him away to wander around like a gypsy. Now you've come close to getting him killed.
You know Fat Gervin. He ain't gonna kill anybody. He's full of wind. And I'll bet that shotgun wasn't even loaded.
He knew better, for he'd been shaking all the way to his toes looking into that wide, dark muzzle. But surely the Lord made allowances when a man lied to a woman for her own good. Eve burned the biscuits, always a sign she had lapsed into a bad humor. After breakfast, Tommy stood in the kitchen doorway, a leftover biscuit wedged in his teeth and fidgeting to be on his way while Eve handed him a sack of food. Giving Huey a distrusting look, she turned and fixed on Tommy.
Don't you do everything your Uncle Huey does. Use your head and don't let him get you hurt.
Give your son credit, Eve. Tommy's level-headed. Like as not, he'll be looking after me more than I'll be looking after him.
That's exactly what I'm afraid of.
Tommy finished the biscuit and peered into the sack to see what his mother had fixed for him.
Mama, I'm grown almost.
I want to see you live to get grown. It's a wonder to me that your Uncle Huey has survived this long.
Huey swung into the saddle.
Caution and clean living is what's done it. We'd better be starting. It's a long way to Alpine.
As Huey expected, old man Jenkins' reaction to the horses was not pleasant to watch. He feared at first his employer would burst a blood vessel the way the veins rose in his neck.
I talked to the sheriff. He said there was nothing he could do. Said you'd ought to get you a lawyer.
I don't trust lawyers. And from now on, I ain't trusting bankers either. Since you knew him, why didn't you warn me about Frank Gervin?
I did. I said all you could be sure of was that he would do the wrong thing. Anyway, you'd already made the deal.
Jenkins stewed, studying the horses corralled at the J-Bar headquarters after a 3-day walk and trot from Upton City.
At least we got them here in good shape. Didn't lose a one.
It might have been better if you'd lost them all, especially that black. Acts like he's been on loco weed.
Yeah, he needed a good cutting and didn't get it.
We'll do it when the almanac says the signs are right. Till then, watch out for him. He'll hurt somebody.
Huey didn't much like castrating studs, but in this case, he would consider it a privilege.
You gonna do anything about Fat Gervin?
I paid $75 a head. That's $1,500 for 20 head. Taking him to court, it cost me that much or more, and it'd all go into the lawyer's pockets. But there's a Mexican curandero woman over in town that claims she can put a curse on anybody she wants to. She put one on me once. And I never had so much bad luck at one time in my life. I'll see what she can do about Frank Gervin.
Huey would have favored something more direct, but it was Jenkins' money.
If she can put a curse on people, reckon she could turn it the other way around and do somebody some good?
I'll ask her. You got anybody in mind?
Old C.C. Tarpley. Considering the sort of man he is, he ain't a bad feller. He needs all the help he can get.
I'll talk to her, but you'd do better with a preacher.
Jenkins watched Tommy unsaddle his dun and begin brushing him down.
I wasn't sure you'd bring the boy back with you.
I hinted every way I knew how for him to stay home, but he's bound and determined to learn the trade. Says he wants a ranch of his own someday.
He's got a good spirit, and there's a lot he can learn from you.
I didn't set out to be no teacher.
For $40 a month, you can add that to your job.
Jenkins turned his attention back to the horses.
They ain't much. But I'd like you and the boy to take him down to the Circle W. Maybe the hands can teach these skates a little something. Then I can resell them and recover some of my investment.
What you want us to do after we've made the delivery?
Stay there. The crew's branding calves and you'll be a right smart of help.
Jenkins squinted one eye again. Huey had learned that that was a sign he had something on his mind. Sometimes good, but more often not.
Since you couldn't see your way clear to take the foreman's job I offered you down there, I've hired another man. Name's Ralph Underhill. You'll report to him.
Huey nodded. For $40, he didn't much mind who he reported to.
I've made it clear to him that I don't want you riding any Bronx.
Wait, you know I can do anything them boys can to make a better job of it.
Damn it, Huey, I know how old you are. These Bronx are for Aparicio and the younger hands.
Well, next thing you'll be telling me to swamp for Bias around the wagon.
There's plenty of cow work you can do better than most. Ain't no call for you to do it riding a bronc.
Jenkins turned away, then came back.
Underhill's a top hand with horses and cattle, but he don't get along with men too good. You'll find him a little on the touchy side.
This old man Jenkins is touchy. Anybody he regards as touchy must be a bearcat sure enough.
He wished Bige Saunders could be foreman at the Circle W, but Jenkins needed him here on the home place. Jenkins' auto driver, Peeler, eyed the newly arrived horses with silent disapproval. He wore jodhpurs and tall lace-up boots, which Huey thought looked plumb disgraceful on a cowboy. After Jenkins walked away, Peeler sidled over.
Looks like you and Mr. Jenkins took a skinning.
Well, it was his money.
But it'd be your skin if you had to ride any of them outlaws. And the whole outfit would be ahead if you just drive these snides up onto the rim rock and jump them off.
Well, I'm tempted, but I never killed a horse in my life, no matter how much they deserved it.
Had you rather have these horses on your conscience or some poor cowpuncher?
Neither one. But I would like to tie Fat Gervin to that black stud and turn him loose on the side of a mountain. I could sell tickets to every man, woman, and child in Upton City.
It's horses like these that convince me I'd rather be driving an automobile.
Peeler rolled a cigarette and offered the sack to Huey. Huey accepted with a nod.
You want one more piece of advice?
It can't hurt none.
Don't forget what Mr. Jenkins said about Ralph Underhill. He's got sore toes on both feet. Even his mama probably didn't like him much.
I get along fine with most people.
Ralph Underhill ain't most people. Me and him almost come to a knuckle-busting before he went down to the ranch. And we would have, if it hadn't been for Mr. Jenkins.
Well, I'll tiptoe when I'm around him. Gotta set a good example for Tommy.
The only good news to come his way since arriving with the horses was that Bias Viegas was at the lower ranch, cooking for the hands while they branded the J-Bar on Jenkins' newly acquired calf crop. Branding could not be done at the time the cows were being counted because ownership had not been legally transferred. The deal could have collapsed, as it almost did, over the value of a crowbar. Because he had bought the rights to the Circle W brand along with the cattle, Jenkins would not have to change brands on the older animals. Attrition would gradually phase out the Circle W. Trailing had become almost routine for the horses, so they gave Huey and Tommy little trouble, except for the black stud. It often tried to pick a fight and kept the other horses in fear, except for one wiry little pate, short of leg and shorter of patience. After feeling the sting of sharp teeth, the squealing paint landed a solid kick to the stud's belly where it would inflict the most pain. Afterward, the black was selective in its bullying and kept a wary eye on the paint. Ordinarily, Huey had a low opinion of paint horses, but he decided this one had special virtues.
I'd like to set Fat Gervin behind that kicking paint and see how fast he could dodge.
Tommy grinned, savoring the image.
Mama would say revenge's the mean and hollow thing.
Yeah, but thinking about it's like music to the mind.
It was good not to have to open any more pasture gates once they were inside the Circle W's perimeter fence. The horses acted as if they sensed that the journey was almost over. Even the stud settled down to purposeful traveling. Huey let Tommy lope ahead to open the corral gate. He contented himself to stay behind the horses at a slower pace, for jolting across rough ground and stirred a pain in his side. That seemed to be happening a lot lately. As the horses began filing through the opening, Huey gave his attention to a horseman who stationed himself on the opposite side from Tommy to make sure none doubled back. The rider sat rigidly, one hand on his hip, his attitude that of a man who controlled all creation. Even before the introductions, Huey decided this was the new foreman, Ralph Underhill. His surmise was confirmed by a challenging tone of voice as the man ordered Tommy to shut the gate and rode up to Huey.
I thought you were supposed to be bringing me a string of horses.
The attitude rankled Huey.
Well, they ain't burros.
I've seen burros that look better. You picked these yourself?
I'm not any happier about them than you are. Mr. Jenkins made a deal with a four-flusher, and this is what he got.
I'm guessing you'd be Huey Calloway.
Well, that'd be a right fair guess.
Mr. Jenkins told me you'd be coming along with some broncs. Though he didn't expect you quite so soon, said you was taking a little vacation.
It don't take me long to vacate.
You won't get any vacation here. This is a working outfit.
Huey sensed that Underhill had a mad on about something. He supposed it was the poor quality of the horse flesh, which was understandable. But there wasn't any point in taking his frustrations out on Huey. Underhill didn't take them out on Huey alone. He turned harshly on Tommy, who remained at the gate, afoot, awaiting instruction.
Hey, Button! Don't just stand there with your thumb up your butt. See them boys branding calves in that corral yonder? Fall in there and see if you can be some help.
Chastened, Tommy swung quickly into the saddle and rode away in a long trot.
You got no call to talk to the boy that away. He's my nephew.
I don't care if he's the Prince of Wales. If he works here, he works here.
Huey felt a streak of rebellion coming on. He saw Bias Viegas's chuck wagon standing idle beneath the trees. Bias would be cooking in the bunkhouse kitchen as long as they were at the headquarters.
It's been a long ride. I'm going for some of Bias's coffee.
You can drink coffee when everybody else gets to drink coffee.
Underhill pointed at the horses.
Go in there and show me what you brought.
Underhill gave orders the way Huey remembered army sergeants doing it. A thoughtful ranch foreman would usually be more subtle in exerting his authority, framing his orders in the form of a request rather than a command.
Yes, sir.
The crisp, exaggerated response was the way he addressed officers in the Spanish War. It was a way of telling Underhill he was two sizes too big for his britches. Underhill got the message, for his face turned red. Huey liked the Circle W, but his stay was likely to be short if this was the way he and Tommy were going to be treated. Underhill pointed his chin at Biscuit.
Is that your own horse or the company's?
It belongs to me.
Most places I've seen, they don't allow private horses eating company feed.
Mr. Jenkins never had any objections. I wonder if he's like this with everybody or if I'm a special case.
If he sees fit to allow it, it's his ranch and his feed. But it was up to me.
Underhill did not finish. He passed through the gate and left it for Huey to close. He walked toward the horses, most of which faced around to watch him suspiciously. A man afoot in a corral had never been good news to them. The stud bared its teeth.
I'd keep an eye on that one.
Underhill must have heard, but he made no response. He walked directly toward the black. It backed its ears and made a bluffing start in his direction, paused, then came forward again with serious intent. Underhill stood his ground, waiting until the stud was almost upon him. Underhill slapped his hat across its nose. Startled, the black pawed at him, missed, then turned and ran back into the bunch, eyes rolling. He looked as confused as when the paint kicked it in the belly.
Well, at least the son of a bitch is not afraid of horses. It took nerve to stand and call a bluff like that. I'll give him a little time before I haul off and punch him in the nose.
Underhill walked among the horses, which drew to one side or the other at his approach, all giving him their full attention. Huey suspected when he was done, he could probably turn away and give a pretty good description of each animal without looking back. He had the marks of a horseman, even if he was a son of a bitch.
You can tell by the saddle marks that most of them have been ridden before, or ridden at. But we'll stake some of them after supper like they were all young broncs. Might be something we can salvage.
It'll be like trying to find a ripe peach in a barrel of rotten apples, but, we can try.
We? Mr. Jenkins gave me strict orders that you're not supposed to ride any broncs. Seems like you're some kind of privileged character.
So that was it, Huey thought. Underhill resented his being considered a special case.
Mr. Jenkins has a notion I'm getting a little too much age on me to ride the rough string anymore. But what he don't see, he don't need to know. And what he don't know won't hurt him. I'll do my share of the riding along with everybody else.
Underhill shook his head.
When I work for a man, I do what he tells me. These broncs are for the young hands.
I'll ride broncs if I've a mind to.
Do and I'll fire you.
Try to fire me and I'll quit.
Underhill turned to face him.
Looks like me and you ain't going to get along very good.
Sure looks like.
Mr. Jenkins says you're a top hand, so I'll try and put up with you for a little while. Maybe we can come to an accommodation.
You ask anybody. They tell you I've always had a smiling disposition.
Underhill peered closely at him, and Huey tried to force a smile. Underhill stalked through the gate and left it open. Huey hurried to close it so the horses wouldn't get out. He sensed that even in silence, Underhill got the last word. Almost, anyway. Huey walked up to the bunkhouse to get that cup of coffee. While he sat at the long table, the cup in his hand, he questioned Bias about the new foreman.
He is a boss. I've had many bosses. He's not the worst.
Well, how do you get along with him?
I do as I am told.
He left unstated the fact that as a Mexican working for gringo bosses, he had always done as he was told. That was the key to survival.
He seems to have a burr under his blanket. Maybe a bunch of them.
It is said that his wife left him and took their child. That is a hard thing for a man to bear.
She probably had reason enough.
It occurred to Huey that he didn't know if Bias ever had a wife. He accepted Bias for what he was, a wagon cook, and never asked questions about his past. Feeling guilty, he asked now, for he realized that the old man's friendship was important to him.
Yes. You ever marry?
Once, in Chihuahua. She was the daughter of a farmer, a campesino. The fever came and she died.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Nah, it was a very long time ago. It is hard even to remember her face. I tried to see her in my mind, and I cannot. It would be an old face now, so perhaps it is as well.
Huey stared into the cup. He found it easy to conjure up Spring Renfro's face in all its detail. It was hard to imagine that someday he might not be able to.
You ever still miss her?
Biaz stared across the room at nothing in particular.
Sometimes at night, when I am dreaming, she comes and lies beside me. I can feel her body, but in the darkness I cannot see her face.
Biaz turned back to Huey.
At least I have something to remember. What have you to remember, Huey?
Huey had never spoken of Spring to anyone here.
Yeah, a lot of country, a lot of horses, a lot of good times.
But there should be more. For every man, there should be at least one woman.
The remnant of coffee had become cold in the cup. Huey walked to the door and flung it out onto the ground. He put the cup in Biasa's tub.
I reckon the boys may need some help with the branding.
At night, when you dream, is that all you can dream of? The branding?
No. Sometimes it's horses.
Aparicio roped calves by the heels and dragged them toward the branding iron fire. Tommy partnered with one of the young Mexican hands to throw the calves down as Aparicio brought them by, then hold them still for branding. Aparicio motioned as Huey climbed over the fence rather than walk all the way down to the gate. He would sooner ride a mile than walk 100 yards.
My arm is tired, Huey. Would you like to heal for a while?
Anybody could flank calves or wield the hot irons, but not everyone was good at roping heels in a branding pen. As Aparicio handed the reins to him, Huey glanced toward Underhill. The foreman was watching. Huey promised himself he would make every loop a good one. Huey roped at least 20 calves before he missed one. By then, Underhill was no longer paying attention, or appeared not to be. At last, Huey searched through the calves, his loop ready, but found none still unbranded. Underhill counted the bloody-edged pieces of ear notched from every calf. That tally jibed with the one he took before the calves were branded.
All done!
Huey could have told him that. He felt as if Underhill was checking up on him. They turned the calves into a larger pen with their mothers to allow them time to pair before being released back into the open. The bawling of the calves was loud, but more pleasant to Huey's ears than a lot of human conversation he had heard lately. Tommy dusted himself off.
I'm sure ready to put away some of Biasa's cooking.
Before anybody stops for supper, we'll stake out some of these broncs.
The job consisted of roping the newly arrived horses, earing them down, and in a few cases, even throwing them to the ground to get a hackamore over their heads. Horsebackers then led them to a stretch of open ground where a scattering of heavy logs and a couple of big wagon wheels waited. Most resisted the lead rope, so the riders had to wrap the long hackamore reins around their saddle horns and half lead and half drag the broncs. Huey saw that Tommy was eyeing the black stud with misgivings.
You're still a little short in the britches to be handling one like that. He's for somebody like Aparicio.
The black seemed to go out of its head when the rope tightened around his neck. It fought wildly, threshing like a fish on a line. Even falling on its side, hooves flailing. After it scrambled to its feet, Huey worked his way up the rope and grabbed the ears, dodging as the bronc tried to paw him.
Put the hackamore on, Tommy!
Yeah.
All the time Tommy and Huey struggled, the stud squealed and kicked. It landed a glancing blow against Tommy's leg, and Tommy fell. Huey feared the black would stomp the boy. He bit down on the left ear to give the animal something else to think about. He knew he'd be spitting out horsehair from now until supper. Tommy got to his feet and finished knotting the hackamore. Huey stepped away quickly so a hoof wouldn't strike him. Huey took a firm grip on the long rein.
Don't bring Biscuit!
Tommy limped as he hurried to fetch Huey's brown horse.
I'll give you this, Galloway. You know what you're doing.
I didn't just start yesterday.
Or 20 years ago, either. You better let one of these young hands wrestle with that black.
I've got him under control.
The stud tried to shake Huey loose. Huey bit down on its ear again, venting on the horse the resentment Underhill roused in him. Turning loose, Huey mounted Biscuit and wrapped the long hackamore rein around his saddle horn.
Come on, damn you!
In response to the tugging of the rope, the stud bared its teeth and charged. Biscuit dodged, almost unseating Huey, but caused the black to stumble and fall.
Making things rough on yourself. But sometimes the worst things that happen to us are the things we do to ourselves.
As the black regained its feet, Huey put Biscuit into a trot that did not allow slack enough for a fight. Instead, the stud pulled back on the rein in a contest of wills. Biscuit plodded ahead, the black hopping unwillingly on braced legs. Huey chose a heavy log that lay a safe distance from where the other broncs were being staked. Tommy rode along behind, ready to help.
When I get down, you take Biscuit and lead him out of the way. I'll tie this outlaw.
He expected the black to run at him once he was afoot, so the sudden lunge didn't surprise him. Huey jumped to one side and jerked on the long rein, bracing it around his hip.
Peace!
While the black floundered, Huey wrapped the end of the rope around the log and took a quick half-hitch. He stepped back out of the way as the black ran at him again. The log's weight brought the bronc up short at the end of the rein, almost throwing it off its feet. Huey watched in satisfaction as the black transferred its frustrations and began trying to drag the log to death. Each run moved it only a few inches.
Time you've jerked that thing around for an hour or two, you're liable to be about half civilized.
The stud fought its head, trying in vain to free itself from the tyranny of the hackamore. Tommy watched with doubt.
Reckon he'll tame down?
There's only one thing he'll ever be fit for. That's a bar of soap. It'd probably blister the hide off anybody who used it.
Underhill finished tying the paint to a log. He came over to look at the black.
Luckiest thing that could happen would be if he fell over that log and broke a leg.
Underhill shook his head.
Mr. Jenkins spent good money for that skate, so it's up to us to try to make something of him.
He turned to Tommy.
You think you can ride him?
I don't know.
He's just a boy. He's got no business on a loco outlaw like this.
He's being paid a man's wages. He'll do a man's work.
Underhill rode away. Huey felt a rising dread as he studied Tommy.
Sure wish he'd stayed home.
Tired though he was, Huey didn't sleep much. He lay on his cot, staring at the moonlight through the narrow bunkhouse window, listening to others snore. He had heard Tommy turn several times and guessed that his nephew was awake too, thinking about that outlaw black. Tommy broke broncs for Alvin Laudermilk, but Alvin didn't raise any like the loco devil hitched to a log out on the flat. Underhill had not exactly said he would order Tommy to ride the stud, but the implication had been plain enough.
It's on account of me. Underhill doesn't like me, so he's taking it out on Tommy. He's liable to get that boy hurt bad.
Huey would send his nephew packing home tomorrow if he could, but he knew Tommy would refuse to go, fearing it would look as if he were running away. Huey wouldn't leave under those circumstances either, but Tommy was trying to model himself after his uncle.
Why can't he model after somebody else like his daddy or even old C.C. Tarpley? Well, maybe not Tarpley.
The stud remained unbent. Though the hackamore burned a raw sore across its nose, the black fought like a caged cat each time it was caught and led to the log. Underhill watched each day's struggle without comment. The fourth evening, the branding finished earlier than usual. Peeler had driven old man Jenkins out in his touring car to see how the work was progressing.
Them broncs have had enough time to learn that the rope is boss. We'll start riding them this evening.
Huey thought he was applying the word we a little loosely. It was not a foreman's job to ride raw broncs. It was his place to see that the others did. Underhill assigned them, starting by giving Aparicio Rodriguez the paint. It might never be a good cow horse, but Huey was willing to forgive its shortcomings out of respect for the day it stood up for its rights against the black stud. The stud was the last to be assigned. Underhill turned toward Tommy, but his gaze settled upon Huey as he spoke.
They tell me your uncle was a real bronc stamper in his day. Reckon it runs in the blood?
Huey listened for a trace of malice.
Well, I don't know.
And we'll have to find out. If you can handle that stud, you ought to be able to handle anything that comes along.
Huey was not in the habit of arguing with foremen, but this was a time to make an exception.
You know this boy ain't ready to ride a horse like that. He'll be a handful even for me or Aparicio.
You're out. And I've already given Aparicio his mount. It's time to see if this boy can pull his weight.
I can do it, Uncle Huey.
Tommy's words were strong, but Huey heard doubt in his voice.
You heard him yourself.
Underhill walked away, putting an end to the argument. Huey stared after him in frustration, trying to decide which to do first. Fight him or quit?
Would you help me saddle him, Uncle Huey?
Dread stirred like acid in Huey's stomach.
It'd be smarter to roll our bedding and leave here right now.
But we're not going to. We're not going to let some old Bronx scare us.
Well, he scares me.
Daddy always said it's best to spit in the eye of whatever scares you and go ahead with what you have to do.
That had usually been Huey's philosophy, though circumstances from time to time caused him to back away and rethink his principles.
Your daddy may not have taken a good look at that black stud.
Underhill jerked a thumb in Tommy's direction.
Let's see what you can do.
Crazy beast!
The black fought so hard, Huey had to rope it by its forefeet to trip it, then tie up one foot while the horse was down. Even on 3 feet, the squealing stud was formidable, lunging against the rope, eyes rolling, nostrils flaring as Tommy kept trying to place the saddle blanket on its back.
This horse is crazy as a bedbug!
They managed finally to get Tommy's saddle on. While Huey gripped the black's ears, Tommy attempted to fit his left foot into the stirrup. Somehow it kicked Tommy on the hip and sent him spinning back, falling in the dirt.
Oh, that settles it! Tommy ain't riding this loco son of a bitch! Aparicio, grab a hold of him!
The vaquero took Huey's place, holding the ears, biting down on one as the black kicked at Huey and raised his leg. Huey gritted his teeth against the flash of pain and grabbed for the bouncing stirrup. He shoved his foot into it and grasped the horn. He swung up, leaning forward to offset the pull if the Bronx should suddenly surge ahead before he was firmly set. He considered keeping his hold on the horn, but he let pride prevail over prudence. A real Bronx stomper did not grab leather. The black lunged forward, nearly falling. Old man Jenkins approached the fence.
Huey Calloway, what the hell do you think you're doing?
All right, Aparicio! Untie his foot!
The vaquero loosened the rope and scrambled out of the way. The stud seemed to twist halfway around in midair and come down at a 90-degree angle from where it started. The impact of hooves against the ground jammed Huey's teeth together so hard he feared some might shatter. Before Huey could regain his balance, the black was in the air again, repeating the twisting motion. Huey tried to anticipate and counter the move, but he seemed always a second behind. He felt his head twisting and thought he could imagine how a chicken felt as its neck was wrung. He knew he showed daylight between his seat and the saddle. He tightened the grip of his knees and tried to contemplate the virtues of a nice, soft job intact. He saw the fence coming at him and realized the Bronc was going to strike it a glancing blow. He could do nothing to protect himself from the impact. His right knee seemed to explode as it smacked against a post. The shock set Huey's head to reeling. He forgot about pride and grabbed the saddle horn, trying to steady himself. He was sure the pounding had broken something loose inside. His lungs, his liver, he had no idea what. He hurt like he'd never hurt in his life. The black made another high jump, but somehow failed to land solidly. The legs buckled, and it slammed down hard on its right side, pinning the already injured knee. The horse rolled half over, threshing to find its feet. The saddle horn punched against Huey's ribs. He felt as if he were sinking into a deep pit of agony. A thousand bright suns circled around him. The black scrambled to get up. Instinctively, Huey's hand found the horn again. He heard the shouts of the cowboys, but the only voice that came through clearly was Aparicio's.
Jump, Huey! Jump!
He felt the stud surge ahead, then slam hard against the fence. The force of the sudden stop hurled Huey forward. He smashed against the fence and fell away. The back of his head slammed against the ground. For a panicked moment, he wondered where the Bronc was, but he couldn't see. He feared the strike of the hooves, or perhaps having his foot caught in the stirrup so that he'd be dragged around the corral. Strong hands tugged at him, pulling him away from the fence, but he couldn't find the faces through the brilliance of all those whirling suns. He fought for breath and tasted the sticky salt of blood on his lips. He wanted to cry out, but couldn't muster the voice.
I believe that crazy Bronc broke his neck.
Huey wondered if Underhill was talking about him or the horse.
We ought to have shot that outlaw. Now we won't have to.
The Black's neck, then. But Huey felt as if it might be his own as well. He hurt from his feet to the top of his head. He tried to move his hands, but his left didn't respond. The sharp pain told him the arm was broken. So was every other bone in his body, for all he could tell.
Damn it. I've kept telling him one of these Bronx would kill him someday. Salinas, ride to the bunkhouse and tell Peter to fetch that automobile down here. Spur like hell.
Huey lapsed into semi-consciousness, though he was aware when they lifted him from the ground.
Gentle with him, boys. If he's got any broken ribs, they might punch a hole in his lung.
A sharp pain pierced his left side, and his arm felt as if it were wrenching itself loose from his shoulder. He was vaguely aware of being carried and of the misery that compounded with every stride.
You don't reckon he's gonna die?
Huey had wondered now and again how death must feel. At this point, he thought it might come as a relief. But amid all those whirling flashes of light, he glimpsed Tommy's face, beseeching him to live. He drifted off somewhere far away and remained there a while in some vague sort of limbo. He was only dimly conscious of the automobile's roar.
Ease him into the back seat, boys. Careful. Ain't no telling what all may be broke.
He's my uncle. I want to go with him.
All right. You may have to hold him down if the pain really hits him. I think he's got a busted arm and leg. Maybe some ribs. His innards may be a mess, too.
Mala suerte. He is a good one, that one.
Was. If he lives, he won't ever be the same again. He was a great cowboy in his day. I wish he'd quit while he was still in one piece.
You sure that stud is dead? If he ain't, I'll cut his damn throat.
100 years from now, he won't be any better.
Tommy sat down on the edge of the back seat beside Huey.
Don't you die, Uncle Huey. Don't you die on me like Skip did.
The starting of the trip was a nightmare of agony, the automobile jolting unmercifully on the rough trail that passed for a road.
A good $40 cowboy busted to hell by a bronc that wasn't worth 20. Why does this bad luck always happen to me?
Maybe Doc Evans can fix him up.
You can patch an old shirt, but it'll just be an old shirt with patches on it. Maybe someday I'll learn to fire every cowboy as soon as he turns 30.
Huey wanted to protest that he wasn't as old as Jenkins made out, but he couldn't muster voice. He wasn't even sure that what he was hearing was real. All kinds of images ran through his mind like a magic lantern show gone berserk. But some were hallucinations, flitting dreams and nightmares prompted by the pain.
You oughtn't to have done it. I could have handled it.
Huey wanted to say he doubted it, but he couldn't form the words. Gradually, consciousness fell away, and with it, much of the hurting. Through a haze, he saw Tommy leaning protectively over him. Strangely, his nephew seemed to change, to grow younger and smaller. He was as Huey remembered him about 4 years ago, when Tommy bid him a tearful goodbye.
You'll be back, won't you, Uncle Huey? You ain't gonna let some bronc kill you.
Maybe he had let that black stud kill him. Huey realized the pain was draining away from him. Everything that hurt so terribly was going numb. Gradually, he began feeling warm and safe and comfortable, as if he were floating free on a soft cushion of air or a gentle south wind. A sense of euphoria came over him, a sense of peace so total that he could compare it with nothing in his experience.
I'm dying.
Huey wondered that the thought brought him no fear. He found himself welcoming it. Faces came to him, dear faces out of the past, his mother, whom he barely remembered because she died so young, and his father, who never quite found his way. He wanted to call to them, but found no voice. They seemed to want to speak to him, but made no move to come closer. They faded as in a twilight mist, and in their place came his old sidekick, Grady Welch, flashing a wide, happy grin that had been his trademark. He and Snort Yarnell had been a pair to draw to, so much alike they could have been brothers. Grady waved and turned to mount a black horse that appeared out of nowhere.
A horse like the one that got me.
He saw that the horse had four stocking feet, like the one that stomped Grady to death. Huey tried to shout a warning to tell Grady not to get on him, but he still had no voice. Grady and the horse drifted away into the same twilight mist that took Huey's mother and father. Huey was alone. He wanted to follow, for the mist seemed friendly, like an easy April rain, but he couldn't move. The warm glow enveloped him once more, and he would have been content to remain in its embrace forever. He felt as if someone were tugging on his arm, trying to pull him back toward the darkness. He resisted, for he didn't want to go back. He didn't want to leave this cradle of peace. He saw Spring Renfro. She held his hand, bidding him to follow her, but the direction was wrong. It led back to the pain. She smiled with reassurance, and it was the smile she gave him the day he first met her long ago. He tried to pull away from her grip, for death seemed preferable to the agony. Sadness came into her blue eyes, the sadness he saw the day she released him from his promise so he might ride away once again, a free spirit seeking a place that didn't exist and perhaps never existed, where time would stand still and he would always be 20 years old. In her eyes, he saw what those 4 years of freedom cost him. For now, she belonged to another. She gave him a faint smile that seemed to say goodbye, and a terrible loneliness settled upon him. He reached for her, but she was gone, back into the mist. He tried to call to her, but he could summon no voice. The regret lasted only a moment, for he settled again into the peace of this strange place. He didn't want to leave. He felt the tugging once more and fought to remain where he was. He never realized how easy it would be to accept death when it came with the faces of his mother and father and good old Grady Welch. But the hand he could not see kept pulling him away against his will.
Let me go. It's better where I am.
He saw a face forming in the mist, and it was his nephew's. Tears welled in Tommy's eyes. He held firmly to Huey's right hand.
Hang on, Uncle Huey. Don't you die and leave me.
Huey wanted to tell him how it was.
I did die, and you pulled me back. I wanted to stay there, but you wouldn't let me.
The misery returned, strong as before, and told him he was still alive. Tears stung his eyes and warmed his face as they trickled down. Alive? But alive for what? A particularly severe jolt sent a shock coursing through Huey and caused him to lapse into unconsciousness again. Spring Renfro came back to him, telling him he was going to be all right. He reached toward her, but he couldn't find her. She disappeared into a gray haze, gone with a man named Farley Neal. Huey had but little concept of the time spent on the road to Alpine. He was aware of Tommy jumping out to open gates, but he had no idea how many there were. He realized the car had come to a stop, and he heard Peeler pounding on a door, calling for Dr. Evans. They picked him up and carried him inside. The next thing he knew, he was lying on a bed, his boots and clothes off, and the doctor was feeling his arms and legs, trying to locate broken bones. He caught the unpleasant odor of medicines and disinfectant. Dr. Evans's hands searched down Huey's right leg.
Is that where it hurts?
Miraculously, it seemed, Huey could speak.
It hurts every place there is.
That knee looks bad.
I can't raise my left arm.
It's broken. Didn't anybody ever tell you that riding broncs is a job for the young?
He done some talking out of his head. From what he was saying, I'm afraid he's probably tore up inside, too.
I can wrap his ribs and his knee. I can put a cast on his arm. But as to internal injuries, they will either heal themselves or they won't. I'm afraid they are beyond any abilities of mine.
Do what you can. He's been a good hand, even if sometimes he hadn't got the judgment God gave a jackrabbit.
Huey was not too far out of it to grasp what Jenkins was implying. He's been a good hand. Been. Like it was all over with. Like he really had died. He tried to raise up, but fell back. Somewhere inside, something was badly wrong. Tommy bent over him.
You better lay still, Uncle Huey.
Huey squeezed his eyes shut as if that would block off the pain. He felt tears burning. Crying like a baby. Hell of a thing for a grown man. When the worst of it was past, he managed a weak voice.
Did they say that Black Stud is dead?
Broke his neck when he hit the fence.
I almost wish he'd broken mine, too. Seems like he broke everything else.
Huey remembered the brief period of peace when death came to him like a friend and took away the pain. It still seemed as if he should be able to reach out and grasp it and leave this suffering behind.
Son, you better wait out in the front room. I'm gonna set his arm and won't be something a boy would want to watch.
The doctor looked to Peeler.
Would you mind helping me?
I'll be close by, Uncle Huey. If you need anything, just holler.
Huey would holler, all right. He would holler like hell when they set that arm. The work done, Dr. Evans brought something in a glass.
Drink this. It should dull your senses and help you sleep.
Is it whiskey?
Cold sweat ran down his face and burned his eyes. Huey would give a week's pay for a double shot of bourbon or rye. He would even settle for tequila.
Not quite, but it should have some of the same effect.
It certainly was not whiskey, Huey found as soon as he gulped it down. The worst rot gut he'd ever tasted was ambrosia in comparison. But in a while, he felt more at ease and dropped off to sleep. When he opened his eyes, daylight through the window made him close them again quickly.
You awake, Uncle Huey?
I ain't even sure I'm alive.
He knew he must be, however. A dead man wouldn't hurt so much. His ribs were wrapped tightly. He moved his right arm, then tried to move his left, but found it in a cast, tightly bound. His right leg was immobilized. It felt as if it weighed 100 pounds. Trying to lift it sent pain lancing through his body.
I've roped and tied cattle that wasn't as helpless as this.
I wish you'd had more faith in me. You wouldn't be here if you hadn't taken it on yourself to try and ride my bronc.
I was afraid he'd hurt you.
I'm younger than you are, not near as brittle. Now we'll never know if I could have ridden him.
You would have wound up where I'm at.
Maybe. Maybe not.
Tommy turned to stare out the window.
I can't be mad at you. Seen you laying here all busted up. You thought you were doing what was right for me.
I promised your folks I'd look out for you.
You sure did that, all right. Now I'm feeling guilty because you got yourself all tore up taking my place.
There's no cause for you to feel guilty about anything. I didn't give you time to have a say about it.
Huey tried again to raise up, but couldn't.
Besides, I'll be back amongst them before you know it.
That's not the way the doctor talks. For a while, I wasn't even sure you'd live.
Ain't the first time some horse busted my arm. I was always a quick healer.
You weren't always this old.
Dr. Evans walked into the room carrying a steaming cup. Though Huey enjoyed coffee, he found the aroma strangely nauseating.
I don't believe I can handle any coffee.
It's mine, not yours. A man in your condition shouldn't be drinking coffee. At least you seem to have gotten some sleep. That's more than your nephew did. He sat up in this room all night.
It was Huey's turn for guilt.
Was no need in that. Boy, his age needs his rest.
I dozed some. That big chair's pretty comfortable.
Evans felt Huey's forehead, then stuck a thermometer in his mouth.
Feeling any better?
I wish I could let Mom and Daddy know.
You could telephone them.
They don't have a telephone. Costs too much to run a line. But there's one in the sheriff's office. I could tell Wes Wheeler.
The doctor removed the thermometer.
Ain't no need getting your folks all upset. I'll be back at the ranch in a few days.
Frowning in disagreement, the doctor turned to Tommy.
Have you ever talked on the telephone?
No, sir. Never was any reason to before.
Yeah, then I'd better ring Central for you. It's a complicated business, talking long distance.
I'd sure be obliged, sir.
Walter and Eve brought the boy up to have good manners, Huey thought. He wished they'd taught him not to get people unnecessarily excited over something that time would heal.